just call it old-style nation building in Afghanistan.
It's a place of warring tribes, which is to say, a land of opportunity for such as we, who know how to train men and lead them into battle.
We'll go there. We'll say to any chief we can find, do you want to vanquish your foes? Of course, you'll say. Go to it. We'll fight for him, make him king, then we'll subvert that king. We'll seize his royal throne and loot the country 4 ways from Sunday. How's that for a plan?
The new plan for Afghanistan is today's election. Afghans go to the polls to try and establish the first democratic continuity in the nation's history. But the conduct of the election itself could derail the plan. The men and women who would be kingmakers, NATO, the U.S., and the Taliban.
It's a place of warring tribes, which is to say, a land of opportunity for such as we.
The future of Afghanistan begins now on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, it's Michael Caine. John Hockenberry here, Thursday, August 20th. I'm John Hockenberry here with Amy Holmes.
And John Hockenberry, I've got you in my shite.
Yes, that's Sean Connery?
That's a little impression,
it's a great Sean Connery. That's great. That's
coming up this hour, fresh concerns about the HPV vaccine. Should your teen daughter get it? Then the violence in Baghdad could change the plans for U.S. troops. Plus, tips on starting a small business in the recession. Is starting a small business right now just crazy?
Well, the risks and opportunities of recession. But first, Charlie Sennett, executive editor and vice president of Global Post, joins us. With all the candidates running in Afghanistan, Charles, is anyone running on a Peace in Our Time platform, end to the bombing, end to drone strikes, etc.?
There are none of the once and future kings who I know who are running on peace platforms. But probably the person who's sort of emerging as possibly benefiting from all that is unfolding in Kabul today would be Abdullah Abdullah, who was the former foreign minister, because voter turnout is strongest in the north, where he is the strongest, and his big issue is transparency.
Wow, we're going to talk about that and get a profile of Abdullah Abdullah from Charles Sennett, executive editor and vice president of Global Post, in just a few moments. But first, everything you need to know this morning. Amy?
Thanks, John. In the headlines in Afghanistan, more than a dozen polling sites are closed because of militant attacks. Meanwhile, one presidential candidate is calling for the vote to stop because of voting fraud fears. Voters dip their fingers in ink after casting ballots, but there are several reports that the ink can be easily washed off, which, John, actually was supposed to be a good thing, like to stop reprisals. Back home, the U.S. deficit could be smaller than expected. The White House is set to announce this year's deficit will be a mere $1.6 trillion. That's down more than $260 billion from predictions, but it's still an all-time high.
According to a front-page investigation from our partner, the New York Times, the CIA hired Blackwater contractors for a secret program to assassinate top al-Qaeda operatives starting in 2004. Government officials say the program didn't capture or kill any terror suspects. It was shut down in June. Markets were up slightly yesterday. The S&P starts trading at 996, the Dow opens at 9279, and the NASDAQ begins at 1969. Did you know General Electric began in the panic of 1873? That's right. Revlon started in the middle of the Depression in 1932. There are all kinds of companies, Hewlett-Packard among them.
I didn't know lipstick and Jack Welch were both that old.
Well, yeah, Jack's infinitely old. Anyway, what is the opportunity in a recession? Have you decided to take a risk and start a small business? Tell us your story at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. So happy to be back with Amy Holmes.
It's so good to have you back, John.
Thank you, Amy.
It really is.
So it's really a test of a lot of things in Afghanistan this morning. Let's think about it for a second. Hamid Karzai, of course, the incumbent president. It's a test of him. It's a test of the NATO operation to see if stability can be guaranteed enough in Afghanistan to create a continuous democratic sort of succession. This is two elections in a row. And, of course, more important than all of those, it's a test of the hopes of the Afghan people themselves.
You had to vote, and I know there is a lot of concerns all over the country, but this morning I thought I have to go, no matter what happens. I am feeling hopeful. Despite all the difficulty we have, we might be able to turn this country around. And by coming to vote, we are hoping for a better future.
a better future, and that's why Afghans are going to the polls, those who are willing to brave the threats from the Taliban that the election violence will attempt to mar the polling today. Joining us now, once again, Charles Sennett, executive editor and vice president of Global Post, who talked to us at the top of the hour. Is this a two-person race at this point? You mentioned Abdullah Abdullah, the chief challenger to current President Hamid Karzai.
Yeah, I mean, the accepted wisdom is Hamid Karzai is going to win this. He's going to be reelected. But the possibility is, if it's close enough, there could be a runoff. And if there is a runoff election, that will most likely be between Karzai and Dr. Abdullah.
Well, and we've known for a few weeks that Hamid Karzai has essentially conceded that this will be a runoff and that he's at best likely to get 45% of the vote. Joining us now from Kandahar, Afghanistan, is Sarah Chase, who's a special advisor to General Stanley McChrystal, also a well-known journalist who's been in Afghanistan for quite some time, former reporter for National Public Radio. Sarah Chase, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Sarah, what is the feeling on the ground this morning as people go to the polls? Is there a lot of fear? Is there a lot of enthusiasm?
There certainly isn't a lot of enthusiasm. Down here in Kandahar, this is really the area that's most problematic, or the type of area that's most problematic for even holding election at all. I mean, you really have to say that about 13 of the 17 districts in this province are pretty much under the sway of the Taliban. And what that means is that even though ISAF, you know, NATO forces and Afghan security can declare polling places open, technically, that doesn't mean anyone can vote, because the issue isn't just whether they can get to the polling place without being killed today. It's that they're under tremendous psychological pressure from the Taliban and fear reprisals.
Wow.
For example, the eighth finger that's so important to make sure that people don't vote twice is also a death warrant in a lot of these districts. If you're caught with it tonight or tomorrow or the next day, then it's really impossible to protect people.
That's Sarah Chase, who's a special advisor to General Stanley McChrystal, the top commander in Afghanistan. She's in Kandahar. Let me recap for you, because her line isn't great, that there's tremendous regional differences from province to province in Afghanistan. The Taliban controls some, doesn't control others, and that will affect turnout. Charles Sennett, executive editor and vice president of Global Post, can you break down the regional sort of picture that Sarah Chase was giving us there? And we'll go back to her in just a moment.
Sure. I mean, it is understood that in the south and the east, the Taliban has its greatest control. In the north and the west, much less so. And so what we're hearing are the reports of violence coming out of Kabul are considerable, and they're definitely going to affect turnout. And it's that culture of fear that the Taliban has established in the south and east that Sarah was describing that really is going to have people thinking more than twice about whether or not to walk to the polls. But in the north and in the west, that is a place where Abdullah has always been favored. This is the other contender, the sort of second lead in this election after Karzai. And that's why we're saying that we really think in the north and the west there is a heavier voter turnout, and that would definitely favor him.
Good morning, Charlie. This is Amy Holmes here. So is this a surprise that this election might be closer, tighter than people had predicted?
Well, I think it'll be a surprise if indeed Hamid Karzai is not reelected. But I think people have thought it was quite possible there could be a runoff for some time. I do think it's also possible that he'll just sail through and be reelected. But as I say, with the violence definitely unfolding in Kabul, as has been feared, and with a higher turnout in the north and west, it looks like Abdullah's going to get that chance for a runoff.
Well, we'll see how that complicates the matters facing General Stanley McChrystal inside Afghanistan. Back to Sarah Chase now, who is an advisor to General McChrystal. Sarah, how does a runoff complicate matters for General McChrystal, and how does a low turnout make this election illegitimate? Is there any sort of threshold there?
There are a couple of points. One is that a low turnout won't necessarily be visible to us because there's a tremendous, let's just say that there's quite significant evidence of ballot box stuffing, particularly in those districts in which there's a low turnout. So those districts are, as Charlie said, mostly in Pashtun areas, but that doesn't mean that everyone here supports President Karzai, quite to the contrary. So I've been getting reports in of deals being worked between election officials and police officers, for example, to allow the stuffing of ballot boxes. So that's where the low turnout becomes very, very complicated. It actually works to President Karzai's favor in the sense that a lot of the vote rigging is being done by his officials.
Very interesting. Go ahead, Sarah.
And that's counterintuitive, but it's quite clear, the evidence that I've been gathering in the last, today certainly, in the last couple of weeks. As to the second round, I mean, on the one hand, it's an important possibility in the sense that it does show Afghans that their votes can actually achieve something. Up till now, they're not at all convinced of that because they voted in 2004 for the candidate that was, you know, strongly backed by the international community. Afghans are quite convinced that the international community still backs President Karzai. So the very fact of a second round would be important for the democratic process.
So it's important. Afghanistan. It's important that the process move forward, Sarah, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Let me bring Fariba. Sarah, hold on there just for a second. Let me just add one other voice here to our conversation. Fariba Nawaz is a freelance journalist in Fremont, California, where I gathered this morning there are a lot of people in Fremont who wish they had absentee ballots.
Yes, they do. I think people are a lot more interested in voting here than they are in Afghanistan. I live in the largest Afghan diaspora community in the United States. It's called Little Kabul here in the Bay Area in California.
And how closely are you watching this? Are you concerned about the violence? What are people telling you?
People are very concerned about the violence because we all have relatives and friends back home. Everyone I know has been in touch on the phone and watching Afghan television on satellite tonight. And some of us are waking up very early to find out what's going on with the elections.
So, Sarah Chase, this is Amy Holmes. And yesterday we were talking to General Zinni about metrics in Afghanistan. When can we know that we're making progress? And I thought it was quite notable that one of the things he did not talk about was the outcome of this election. You're there advising General Stanley McChrystal. What do you have to say about that?
It's hard for me to answer. I do find that curious. And I think there tends to be an assumption by the international community, particularly the further away one gets from Afghanistan, that just holding an election is a positive thing and is a kind of count in the win column and can be a sort of game changer to converting the situation in Afghanistan. Whereas I live quite closely embedded with Afghan population, and I don't think it's quite that clear. I think that if there is a widespread perception that this event has been tampered with, it's not going to redound positively. You know?
Right. It'll produce the opposite effect, in fact. It'll actually produce the opposite effect, in fact. And Fariba Nawaz, freelance journalist from Fremont, California, and Sarah Chase, special advisor to General Stanley McChrystal, we want to come back to you later on this morning because we're going to be following this all morning on The Takeaway. Charlie, Senate Executive Editor and Vice President of Global Post, take us out. What is the likelihood that this election will simply reinforce the status quo of a weak central government controlling little more than Kabul and the Taliban controlling so much more of the country?
I think that's an inevitable result because that's the reality on the ground. I mean, this, even if it is, for example, Dr. Abdullah who is elected, and that would be surprising if it did happen, it would still be the case of the history of Afghanistan has always been weak central governments in Kabul that can't control the unruly areas outside of the capital city. The other really big trend is the Pashtun belt in the south and the east, and as it straddles the border with Pakistan, and an emerging sense of a Pashtun nationalism there along
so
the border.
So Pashtun nationalism is part of the takeaway, and also a weak central government possibly being enshrined in the election today. Charlie Sennett, thanks so much. Charlie Sennett, Executive Editor and Vice President of Global Post.
Let's take a look at today.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.